Yeah. Let's take them back.
Welcome to a special five-part Inquirer Sports podcast series. I'm Paul Daner Jr. One player at a time, I'm transporting you back a decade to a season when the Cincinnati Bengals dismissed 15 years of losing to become AFC North champs and most exciting team in the NFL. And man, did this city ever love them. It ended when Kimo von Olhoffen became a household name in the houses of tortured Cincinnati sports fans. For that year, though, the 05 Bengals entered the realm of most popular teams in Cincinnati history. This is their story.
All right, well, welcome to our retrospective look at the 2005 season, and my guest here with me is one that doesn't need an introduction, but I'll do it anyway. I had a 13-year career, 12 of them with the Cincinnati Bengals from 1996 to 2007. Multiple Pro Bowler, multiple All-Pro, first-round pick, Willie Anderson. Big Willie, thank you so much for joining me, man.
No problem. How's it going, man?
You know, it's going great. It was kind of going back through this 2005 season. There's so many different personalities of guys, and you're living in Atlanta now, right? So, what are you up to? I mean, everybody, right when you ended up retiring, everyone was following everything you were doing off the field. What do you have going on now?
Well, right now I have my Willie Anderson Sports Academy. We're out of my academy. We put on a series of camps and seminars and different aspects for student athletes here in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. We actually travel around putting on offensive linemen, defensive linemen camps and tournaments. And we have a facility here where we train. We train a lot of high school and college kids as far as offensive linemen and defensive linemen. So that's kind of what my passion is at. You know, I got out of the fat burger restaurant businesses, and I jumped head into heels into something that's very easy for me and a passion for me, which is sports, and in particular youth sports.
Yeah, yeah. Now, kind of looking back, you're in a unique position with your role, because you were in Cincinnati for so long and went through some of the lows as far as, and then really, really hitting some highs in some of your last years here in Cincinnati. What was your biggest takeaway of that revitalization, so to speak? What was the biggest reason you think that everything changed and started building towards what ended up being that 05 team that was really a special one?
Well, I used to always say around that 2005, 2006 season, once Marvin kind of started putting things together, I used to always make a joke and say, hey, man, I say, the Bengals probably don't want me around here, because I remember when it was bad, bad, bad. I mean, I remember the days when we didn't have much talent, and it seems like, I don't know if that was the case, but it seems like we weren't trying to acquire that much talent as well. But after Marvin got there, it seems as though the drafting got better, the free agent pickups. Even though we didn't have the splash guys, the guys made a difference. Guys like John Thornton, even Kevin Hardy for a while. But, losing to Keo in the 2003 season, you know, we thought we were losing a big cog in the defense. But we had guys to come back in. I mean, I don't necessarily think we replaced the Keo, but I think we filled in with guys that were serviceable. And Marvin got the best out of a lot of free agents. But the biggest thing to me was the talent we started to acquire. I mean, you started getting Carson, Eric Steinbach, myself and Richie were already there, Richie Brown. We then brought over free agents like Bobby Williams that made an impact for a long time. So on the offense and picking a guy, I think Rudy was already there, but I think Marvin's style of offense kind of got Rudy's career jumping. And, you know, that was 2 years after Corey had left and went to the Patriots. So I think the talent that we acquired in the offseason and the talent through the draft was particularly different than it were in other years.
In your some of your first years there, you know, because I think a lot was talked about how it, that year in 05 in particular, it became very cool to be not just play for the Bengals, but be a Bengals fan, and it kind of changed the perception of the organization. But when you, in your early years there, was it a challenge to get rookies to buy into that the team just because they had been bad for so long?
It was that, man. We just had, you know, it was a core group of guys that were good guys and a core group of guys that I felt that didn't give a damn. And mm-hmm. there were things that I could have done better, you know, as a young guy, and I can't blame a lot of people. You know, I felt like early in my career I could have been in better shape and conditioning. But if you think back, you know, from the 96, I got the 96. The 96 season, you know, I thought as a rookie, I thought, hey, everything is great. We're about to be 8-8. We're one game away from being, I think, Jacksonville Jaguars that year. We're 9-7. Mm-hmm. They made it to the playoffs. So we were one game away from going to the playoffs. You take 97, Boomer comes back, and we think, you know, the world is going up. But the biggest thing we found out through the NFL during that period of time is if you didn't have an elite quarterback with an elite coach, head coach, those two things got you at least into the playoffs, and the elite coaches and the elite quarterbacks, those guys got you deep into the playoffs and the possibility for a Super Bowl. You take Jacksonville, mm-hmm. that were in our division early on. They had Mark Brunell and Coughlin. You know, Pittsburgh had different guys, but they had Coward at the same time. But I don't think we had the coach and the quarterback to lead those early teams. And you see right now throughout the NFL, you got a strong head coach personality and a quarterback, the dynamics of your team changes because if you're a team that picks a real good quarterback and you pick a strong personality head coach, that kind of means guys are going to probably surround that coach and that quarterback with quality players and staff as well. So,
yeah. You mentioned all the talent that showed up. At what point in 2005, or maybe it was before that, that you noticed it, did you think everything turned to where that offense went from being a good offense to, you know, one of the best in franchise history?
2005 was definitely the year.
Yeah.
I remember in 2006, looking at film, I think we played the Tennessee Titans, and TJ and I were watching film. He said, man, how can Rudy not be a good running back? Like, look at the holes. And he paused the film.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you figure, like, I mean, we had two first-round tackles, myself and Levi Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Stomback, who had first-round talent. You know, a veteran grizzly guy like Richie and a good solid veteran guard with Bobby Williams. I mean, and for that 05 season, guys hardly ever got hurt, you know. So we were pretty good health-wise. And the receiver, the stuff we had a receiver with Chad and TJ and Chris Henry, I mean, and Carson coming to his own and to being an elite quarterback. I mean, it really was sad that the injury happened with Carson, that we didn't get a chance to go further that year with Pittsburgh. But the talent that we had in the league, I mean, we was beating Pittsburgh. I constantly joke with the Baltimore team. Once I got to Baltimore, I was like, hey, man, you guys couldn't stop us. You know, with the Ray Lewis team, they couldn't stop us because we had a Pro Bowl running back, pretty much two Pro Bowl tackles, Pro Bowl quarterback, really two Pro Bowl receivers, and Chris Henry was a first-round talent, even though he was third-round pick. But that offense, and then you take on defense, and the cornerbacks that we had, the secondary we had, those guys, you know, just kept giving Carson the ball back. I mean, I think in 05, we may have led the league in, I think, interceptions or turnovers. So,
yeah.
We had the great formula. We had a 1,500-yard running back, or a Pro Bowl quarterback, and he had a defense that turned the ball back over to him. So that really is the formula for successful football.
Yeah. And you go through that season, and there's so many of them are sort of – that season in a lot of ways was defined by games against Pittsburgh. You know, you had the first game where they kind of – where even though you guys were on the rise at that point in time, Pittsburgh still sort of, you know, at Paul Brown Stadium kind of put you guys back in place. But then when you guys went to Heinz Field and put up a 38 on them to basically win the division, I mean – Was that kind of the defining moment when you look back and said this team can make a Super Bowl run, or was it maybe before that even?
Yeah, it was, because every game versus Pittsburgh is usually just a grind out, hard ass game, man. Just grind out. I mean, you saw the games that we have when I was in Baltimore, and it just a beat you down game, man. That game right there was the first time I can recall. Brakowski started using the no huddle versus Pittsburgh. So Pittsburgh couldn't line. They couldn't figure out what defense to get into. They started playing a four-man front on us, and that basically put, you know, a three technique on both the guards and the ends outside me and Levi, against Levi and I. And we just gassed them in the running game, because for some reason they started taking Casey Hampton out of the game, because Casey couldn't. He's a big nose guard. He couldn't keep up with the fast pace, the no huddle. And for some reason, they thought it really was a great game plan. I give those guys a good job. They brought Reggie Kelly into the backfield, put him at fullback. So Pittsburgh would play nickel against us. So nickel, pick linebackers out, put DBs in. That means we're coming downhill on you, and we just smash you in the mouth with the run game. So they couldn't start rooting in the run game. And then, you know, passing game-wise, so I think Carson just picked him apart.
Yeah. I remember one of the you know, images that always pops up whenever people talk about that particular Bengals team is of TJ with the terrible towel on his shoes after the win. Did you say anything to TJ afterwards, or was that kind of part of the deal?
I didn't really see him do that. I mean, I didn't know about it until we saw, honestly. I don't think a lot of people knew about it until we saw Coward say something after they beat us in the playoffs. And I was told teachers up there, man, you jinxed us. Like, why would you do that? Like, just leave him alone.
but that wouldn't be his way. And really, that, you know, that team with between TJ and Chad and their, I mean, that's what they did, right?
And that's why stuff always came and bite us in the ass too. Like, I believe in football karma and football God. Like, if you're the up-and-coming team, like, just because you won, you know, and people said that, and I believe that, just because you won the game, we're going to see you again. And all you're going to give us is extra momentum. And even though Carson got hurt, so we never would know what happened that year. But, you know, karma kind of bit us, and now they play TJ's thing on NFL Network. I think it's top 10. It's not top 10 rivals. It's they use TJ. Tower waving thing as a momentum for the Super Bowl.
Yeah. You know, is there a way to define what practices were like when you had guys like Chad and TJ and all the trash? Because, I mean, was there as much trash talk in those practices as there was in games?
Well, we kind of found out that's how Chad motivated himself. And the point about Chad, I mean, Chad hardly ever missed a practice. During those hard days, you know, I tell you what, the practices are a lot harder than they are now. Mm. I go to Marvin practices now, and guys are missing practice. And Marvin basically cut me because he said I wouldn't practice enough. So the way the NFL is set now is there aren't that many padded practices. And I mean, Marvin's whole thing then was just to grind out of practice. Practice is always a grind out practice, you know. And I tell guys, I say, hell, practices are what kill former NFL players, not the game. The practices are what kill you. Practices are what that wear on your body, and just constant pounding after a 3-4 hour game on Sunday to come back on Wednesday and Thursday to have those kind of physical days. You know, Marvin really believes in that. So, so with Chad and TJ, it did lighten it up a lot. But we had a lot of characters on the team. I mean, we had, you know, from I think it was Odell Thurman that year. And, the fun guys with me were myself and Levi Jones going at it with Justin Smith and John Thornton. The jokes we all made and just how we acted a fool in practice, because you had to keep practicing lighthearted because, you know, Marvin was grinding you out. So the things I missed were the linemen, the Justin Smith, I think Tony Williams, John Thornton, all those guys that, and the linemen on my part was Steinbach and Levi and Bobby, and the fun we had at practices, knowing that, you know, we had something special going on in the city.
Yeah. That I'm glad you brought that up. That's one thing I wanted to talk about, because you were around for a long time and saw the city kind of struggle, wanting to get that winning season, get that taste. How much did you notice during that year the way that team and the city really connected in a way that hadn't really happened in you know, 15 years?
Well, I looked at it as I used to always laugh and say, "Well, damn!" I said, "I finally get a taste of what I call the old Bengals at the time, the team, the guys from the '80s. You know, the experience. You know, Crumrock used to always talk about it and brag about it to us when he was coaching there. Like, man, you guys just don't know how good the city will treat you once you win it. So, '05, we got a chance to live that. You know, '05, you know, going out to the restaurants, you know, going out in the city, you know, it really. During my period of time, 05 was one of the best times. You know, my rookie season, I told you we went 8-8, so we were still on the cusp of a winning season, 9-7 the next season. So my first 2 years, I thought, hey, man, the NFL is pretty cool. But you know, we had a string from 98 to about 2002 that was just awful. So 03, Marvin get back, and we go 8-8. Everybody's going crazy. I'm like, damn, man, it's just 8-8. You know, 04 we come back. 04 we come back, and I laugh about it all the time. We play the Philadelphia Eagles the last game of the season, and Philly is like, they're going to go to the playoffs the next week, but we're all playing hard as hell just to get that 8th win to have a non-losing season. and we all wanted to get different. We tried to get Rudy the rushing record, which we did. The last game of 04, I think Chad and TJ both got 1,000 yards. You know, Hugh Jackson was begging for that. So 05, when you really get a chance to really win, like to go, you know, to clinch the win in I think Detroit. You know, no one knew what to do. I remember Rob Rucker, the training guy, at the Pro Bowl press conference when we all made the Pro Bowl. He had us he wanted us to wear AFC North hat. Somebody upstairs wanted us to wear AFC North champion hat and T-shirt. We were all like, "Man, really?" And Marvin like, "Hell no, don't wear that. Like, that's corny. Don't do that. It's just a division championship. Like, do that after you win the AFC championship." But no one in the building really knew how to act besides guys like Marvin, who had won a Super Bowl, and you know, but the city was great, man. I mean, going out in the city, you know, it was a good feeling to finally give the fans something. And I joked with Carson, and I maybe kind of jinxed him a little bit. I told him and Steinbach, I said, "Hey, man, it wasn't always like this now, so you got to enjoy this." I said, "Man, enjoy this right now." I said, it wasn't always like this. The NFL is not about, because Carson had, that was Carson's second year starting, and he, you know, Pro Bowl and 30 touchdowns and Bengal records, and it was great. So for the young guys to experience that, because I experienced, you know, like I say, from 98 to 02, some of the worst football ever, that I think is probably going to cost me the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, so bad. Yeah, right. Because that's the thing that people don't, you know, because those teams were so bad, you weren't getting the respect that you should have gotten. Whereas once you guys started winning, you find, you know, you made the Pro Bowl every year.
I hated that, because I tell people, I said, man, look at my damn film. During those times, the bad times, I say, to me, it was harder to play lineman in the bad times. I say, if I go and we're constantly getting beat on the road, and you're down 31-17, and you got to pass the ball the entire second half, it's harder to be a tackle doing that than being a tackle where you're up and just running the ball in the fourth quarter. I said, look at my film during those bad years. I'm having to pass block the entire second half of games probably because we're losing. And I said, I'm not giving up sacks. But you know how it goes. Just because he started winning, people say, oh, he's playing better. I said, no, I'm playing the damn same. Like, how I start playing better at 30, 31 years old?
Yeah, I mean? Exactly. Exactly.
I mean,
it's just the team's
better. I should be going downhill now. Like, how are you going to say I'm playing better? Like, I was playing better at 24 through 29.
Right, absolutely. And that's why for so many people, I felt like, especially guys like you and Richie and guys that had been around, that's why that 05 season was really special, because it felt like, okay, this is, you know, this is the one that we've been waiting for. That's kind of going to offset bad runs like 98 to 02 and things like that. And so, you know, unfortunately, you can't talk about that season without going to that dark place of that wild card game against Pittsburgh. Is there what sticks out to you when you think about Carson's injury, and is there a story or just a reaction or anything or that sticks out to you when you think about that?
Well, the halftime stuff should go in my book.
Yeah.
I probably shouldn't give away halftime stuff unless I get paid for it, because no one has came out and said what happened at that infamous halftime. Only speculation. But
yeah.
but
needless to say, it was crazy.
It was crazy. But
yeah.
I mean, crazy to the point to where I remember walking out the field with Brian Simmons, and Brian Simmons said, "Man, we didn't go over a damn thing."
Yeah.
I said, what? He said, man, we didn't go over nothing. Like, we didn't go over nothing, because halftime was just, you know, like I said, I won't speak on halftime unless I get paid to speak on it. But
yeah.
But when Carson got hurt, man, I mean, I remember blocking my guy. I forgot who I was blocking. I look downfield, and I see Slim, Chris Henry, making a catch, and we all like, yes, you know, the lineman, you use it here. Like, if you have the linemen mic'd up, it's certain roars and grunts linemen give. They see a big play happening, because that's less work we got to do now. If we can complete the ball 50 yards downfield, that's less work. So all the linemen were like, yes, you're ready to talk smack. And you kind of peek back. It's like, if you see on film, we all peek back at the same time. And just, man, like, your heart is just. I remember I let out a scream so loud. That, I mean, I don't even want to tell you what I said, but I was like, I know I said the word, we gonna kill this person.
Yeah.
And it was some F-bombs thrown in there, some MF thrown in there. Like, it was just, because when you look down at Carson, you see Carson screaming, holding his knee. I didn't even see what happened. We didn't see what happened. We just see him on the ground, and it was so crazy that even the Pittsburgh players were all looking in shock down on the ground, because, you know, they all enjoyed the battle, man. Like, they all enjoyed the battle of what we did, and they all knew we kind of had their numbers, too. Like, during those times, they couldn't match up with us. I mean, Chad at his peak, TJ, Carson, the offensive line, myself and Levi, but you got two tackles. You can't get to the – you can't pass rushes because – Levi and I keep you guys out. You know, Steinbeck and Bobby and Richie handling the inside. So we had their numbers, man, and Carson was the one that make it go. And everybody on the field knew that. I mean, you can see it, obviously, in our eyes, but even when you looked at Pittsburgh eyes, they all were, like in shock. Like, you know, Kimo, you know, I would say poor Kimo, but I can't say poor Kimo because he cost us. But I saw the shock in his eyes. He didn't try to do it. I don't know. Can't say for sure. I'm not in his head, but when I saw the shock in his head, his eyes, he looked like in terror too.
Yeah. So, yeah. Because you knew Kimo. Because you knew Kimo from playing with him, right?
So but Kimo didn't. He didn't know Carson, you know, and you know, Pittsburgh, still Pittsburgh, but I don't think he would intentionally, I think somebody, maybe Steinbach, whoever it was, maybe threw him into his knee, and I put it like this, he didn't let up.
Yeah.
He didn't try to go for his knee.
Does it still now, I don't know, that season feeling like you didn't get what you could have had, like it was kind of stolen away, is that still sticking your craw, so to speak?
Not for me. Sticking my craw is that Pittsburgh cost me two times to go to the doggone Super Bowl. I mean, my greatest season I had team-wise was with Baltimore, and, I mean, we were just right there on the verge. I mean, that game was just that game against Baltimore. I know I'm talking about Baltimore Ravens now on the Bengals post, but to me, it wasn't. I can't think about 05 as my missed opportunity because I look at 08 with the Ravens as my missed opportunity. But when I think about it, now that I talk about it, thinking about seeing Carson on the ground and, you know, I remember being in the ice tub after the game. I told my family to go home after the Pittsburgh-Cincinnati game. I stood in the ice tub in the training room for at least 2 hours. I just stood in the ice tub. And I remember Paul Alexander coming over. He came in the pool room. He just looked at me. And he and I and Richie being, you know, the three of the guys that have been around here the longest. And he was just like, damn, man. Like what kind of, like, we were just both in just awe. Like, what kind of luck is this?
Yeah.
Like, damn, like, after all these brutal years, I mean, we finally assembled the team that can do it, and we got the guy at quarterback, and we got the guys around him that can make him look good to have it, and boom, it's all over with. Yeah, like, just God, dog, man.
it's hard. I mean, it's hard to believe, and I know, you know, some you guys that I've talked to have said, There was no doubt in their mind that team was gonna go to the Super Bowl. Did you feel that even now or then? Did you feel like this team was gonna go to the Super Bowl if that hadn't happened?
See me, because I had been around the times I knew the non-playoff win. I knew we were gonna beat Pittsburgh in that playoff game, and if we could have beat Pittsburgh, we beat Pittsburgh. You know, I wasn't thinking about Super Bowl. I was thinking about, man, we're going to beat their ass today. We're going to beat Pittsburgh. And now going to Indy, that's something else. But I knew we was going to go beat Pittsburgh and get our first playoff win in freaking 20-some-odd years, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's like – that's one of those things where – and you can speak pretty – you can speak to this, and it's something that really is relevant today. How much does that hang over guys when you have a streak that's like that, where you know it's been 15 years or 20 years, you know, since you've won a playoff?
I tell you what, when you're losing and your team is terrible, it doesn't hang over your head at all. But
yeah.
when you have a team like 05 and you have a team like they have today, oh, man, it has to be – it has to be killing you, like what is wrong? Like,
yeah.
this year, okay, boom, AJ gets out, and now you're done with that. You know, the previous years, you play a San Diego team, they play San Diego, and you think, okay, it's the time now. Phillip Rivers has completed 30 passing yards in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no way they cannot win. But, like I say, it hangs over you more the better your teams are.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like you talk to Donovan McNabb and those guys on those Philadelphia Eagles teams that went to four straight NFC championship games. Like, that was just disgusting. And I won't even say the, the Bills, because the Bills were bad to them, but to get to the Super Bowl 4 years in a row, you get a lot of winning, and you had a lot of good times. But to not win that one playoff game, man, that's worse.
Yeah. So
to me, it's a worse feeling than the Bills going to four consecutive Super Bowls, because at least they got a chance to have an opportunity to play for the Super Bowl, for the one big game. When you can't win that one playoff game, that kind of hurts you. Even though I picked this year, I came out on my Twitter about 2 months ago and I said, I really think this is the year the Bengals going to win that playoff game.
Yeah. I think that belief exists. I think that, you know, the way that it's, the team's been constructed and the stability, and, you know, you add some draft picks to make sure you've got depth on your line, and it feels like, and when you have so many guys that are coming up in contract, it just feels like you have all the pieces of the puzzle and the urgency necessary to make it right now. Is there to you, is that what it is, or what was the biggest reason why you think that?
It can go either way, you know. Now I said that before I found out, and before I had a couple of players call me about their contracts, I had no idea. They had that many guys up for contract and renegotiation. Now, hopefully some things can get done, because that's the one thing that can derail you. I think they kind of got in a way after the end of our reign we had at Cincinnati. I think contracts and who's going to get paid this and that, that got in the way, because you had the old versus the new and the new versus the old. You know, and, the one constant thing they did, they paid Carson, which was worth it. I mean, you had to pay Carson. I just feel like, you know, it's now or never. Now, if the guys don't let the contract stuff get in the way, I think they have a very good shot at it. They have a tough schedule, but they're going to have to be on the same page, and contract negotiations and hurt feelings are the fastest way for this season here in particular to get derailed.
Yeah. It's there's no doubt. I mean, if you start getting people that are looking around and wondering who's getting the money and wondering why they got an extension and you didn't. But the thing is, at the end of the day, and I don't know how, from a player's perspective, help me out with this. I mean, how much do you have to just say to yourself in that situation, as long as I go and play well, I will get paid, whether it's here or somewhere else? Is that, do you have to pretty much just take that attitude and not go down the black hole of looking around and comparing yourself to who's getting paid in the room you're currently in?
It takes a special individual to do that.
Yeah.
And usually the people who are telling you to do that, it's hard for them to do it they damn self.
Exactly.
Hold on, coach. You're saying don't worry about it, but I just saw you get an extension.
Yeah.
And I've seen times when you didn't get an extension, you were mad and pissed off. So what's the, you know, even guys telling you, oh, man, don't worry about it, you don't get paid. But, you know, sometimes guys know their bodies and, like, man, I might go through the season and don't perform as well, or this, that. You know, a lot of it is just feelings being hurt. Like, you know, I told a particular coach the other day from the Bengals about what really went down with my contract situation, and they had never heard this my story before. Like, you know, it was just, you know, sometimes feelings get hurt, and if I was told one thing and now it changes. You know, now your feelings get hurt, you get mad, and you're like, well, the hell with it. You know, that was not what was told to me in the beginning. That was the reason why, you know, my situation changed. But business is business, and, you know, hey, man, whatever you do, don't bash the team. Don't start getting out in public talking about your contract, because the Cincinnati Bengals are going to be there for another 2 years. At least, you know what I mean? So it will go on and will live without you.
Without you. Hey, is that a thing where you look back now And is that frustrating? Because even though you had a great year in Baltimore, it ended up being, like you said, maybe the best season you've ever been in. Did you want to retire a Bengal? Do you wish you would have?
At the time, I wanted to retire the Bengal. So I was hurt when I was told that I wasn't going to start. Word had got out from guess whoever that I couldn't play anymore and that my foot was unrepairable, that I was done. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm at home in Atlanta playing basketball. Like, what are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine. You know, got to Baltimore, and Baltimore said, oh, you're fine to us. So that hurt in retrospect because it was a hard adjustment. I was more pissed off that I had to adjust at 33 years old. Like, I had to adjust and stay in a hotel for the first month because I couldn't find a place. And I was just mad because, you know, I wanted to be comfortable. I wanted to be how Ray Lewis was in Baltimore. Like, Ray was comfortable. Like, everyone knew Ray was going to show up on Sundays. Ray didn't have to practice. Like, Rex Ryan, the defense that year with the Ravens, they all went through walkthroughs where – the offense, we had rookies and second, third-year guys. Myself was an old guy. Mason, the receiver, was an old guy. Tuff Heat was an old guy. But we pretty much had a young team. So on offense, we had to do all the damn practices on offense. Defense and all those guys, man, they were so fresh. They took it so easy in practice. I was like, damn, that's what I was asking Marvin to do in Cincinnati. Like, I say, Ray will play for the next 5 years on this schedule right here.
Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, I wanted to retire like Ray Lewis did in Baltimore, and I won my last game. I had told myself Ken Anderson's streak was a 16 years. I said, I'm going to play 16 years in Cincy, but, you know, I think in Cincinnati, you know, we all know it, and it's part of the business. That's how they run their business. Once you get to a certain age, start saying that three in front of your name, in front of your number, and a three behind it.
Yeah.
And you gotta start looking behind you and looking what's in the draft and who they drafting. But, you know, that's no hard feelings, but it's just as a player at the time, he was like, damn, like, why can't I do what those guys are doing in the places and retire 15, 16 years here?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I was mad about that, man.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, you know what? We need to get you to write your book because I want to know the rest of the story behind this halftime. Because has everyone sworn to secrecy on what happened?
What happened
that day? Pretty much.
I mean, we're all like, it was never said. Don't say anything about it. But like, I ask myself all the time. I said, why are we all still holding on to this? I think because we like the people that were involved, and you know what I mean. Nobody wants to embarrass anybody. But hey. Pay me the right amount of money, I got a whole vivid story. It includes blood. It includes Carson's wife. It's a crazy story, man.
That's a good teaser for it right there. That might be good enough to get you your book deal. That might be good enough.
IV being ripped out of arms. Oh, man. This is crazy, man.
Well, one of these days, I'll start one of those Kickstarter funds, and we'll see if we can't get the Willie Anderson book deal. That's where we can get the real story. I love it, Willie. Man, thank you so much for taking the time and chat with me. It's been great, kind of going through the old days a little bit, and we need to get something together. We can get the 05 team the proper respect that they need, and come back and honor them at halftime in a game or something. It'd be great.
We got to do something. Tell the fans to start pushing the Bengals to get their ring of honor, man. Like, I truly believe, not myself, but, like, Ken Anderson deserves to be in the NFL Hall of Fame. A couple of the older guys, the Bengals, but definitely Ken. And I always say, I told Jeff Hobson years ago, I say, if we don't honor our own guys, like, why should anyone else?
Right. Absolutely.
The people who keep getting in every year, their own teams honor them. I mean, there's nothing at the Bengals Stadium that's for Anthony Munoz, who's a Hall of Famer. But, you know, I think at the least if it's going to be outside Bengal hatred and outside Bengal hatred by people, I think at least inside our own circle of family, it should be Bengals love and say, you know what, we're going to honor our own guys.
Yeah.
And do what Baltimore does. Baltimore, damn near every two games, honor retired guy jersey in the Ring of Fame, you know, every year it seems like, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, like, why can't we do that right there? Because, you know, people take care of our own guys. I think people start seeing that how special individual guys really were off that Bengals team, after all the great Bengals teams.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. And, you know, I'd say the idea that what that 05 team did to make the city love football again and make the city care about the Bengals again after for so long and feeling like they had something special, I think – I just don't think it ever has gotten enough appreciation, you know, but whether from inside the organization or it had not been talked about enough, because that year was as special of an NFL season as this city has really seen in the, you know, in the post-'80s era.
Absolutely, I mean, because what, 3 years earlier, we were just 2-14?
Right. Yeah. No doubt. Well, Willie, again, thank you so much for joining me, man. It's been a pleasure, and we'll definitely catch up with you in the future. I'll keep you updated on how much on our Kickstarter campaign for the Willie Anderson book deal.
Oh, Devin, we'll do that. I'm dead serious. I mean, people can tell me the right one, not about the Bengals, just about my situation, period. But
love it.
That halftime would definitely be in, and it might be a chapter called Halftime.
I love it. We'll definitely be picking that up. Thanks again, Willie. I really appreciate it, man.
No problem. Thank you. Love with the underdogs on top, and I'm gonna shine, homie, until my heart stops. Go ahead, envy me. I'm Raps MVP, and I ain't going nowhere. Sneaky, get to know me. Need to love with the underdogs on top, and I'm gonna shine, homie, until my heart stops. Go ahead, envy me. I'm Raps MVP, and I ain't going nowhere. Sneaky, get to know me.